Hey everybody, welcome back to Afros and Convos.
Hey.
Hello,
hey.
Hello.
As always, like and subscribe to the podcast, follow us on social media at Afros and Convos on IG, email us at afrosandconvos@gmail.com, check out the website at afrosandconvos.com. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Great. Good.
One dare fail. As we mentioned, this is our Media Madness month, and you know, we said last time that we was talking about Coming to America this week, so that is what we're going to talk about, and Kika is going to lead this episode, so take it away, Kika.
Okay, well, before I start, Cookie, we got to remind the people about the book, right?
Yes, I am so glad you brought that up, because we are reading Homegoing by Yaa Jossie. There we go. Yaa Jossie. Homegoing. We will be talking. I mentioned last time that it was going to be on April 10th. No, I said April 17th, but it's coming out on April 10th. Yeah. So on April 10th, we will have our book discussion on Homegoing by Yaa Jossie. So get your copy, read along with us, and tune in on April 10th to hear our book convo on Homegoing. All right. So let's go ahead and jump on in. Take it away.
All right. Nice. So yes, as Cookie said, we are going to be reviewing Coming to America, the sequel to the 1988 movie Coming to America that was released on March 4th on Amazon Prime. Little backstory, 33 years after, you know, it's been 33 years since the original film came out, we find the main character, Akeem, and his wife, Lisa, celebrating their 30th anniversary, and at the summoning of Akeem's father, Prince, or King Jaffe Jofar, who is passing, he informs Prince Akeem that he actually does have an heir, because him and Lisa only had three daughters, and only a male could take over as heir. He finds out that he has an heir. He has a son that he had while he was in Queens, New York, prior to meeting Lisa. So in fact, he did sow some royal oats while he was over there that he was unaware of. So the movie picks up from there. So first thing, overall thoughts of the movie, cinematography, acting, plot, costume, music, whatever. Like, what were your thoughts on it, Coming to America?
I thought the costumes were great. I thought the cinematography was good. That's like not just how it looks, but like the camera angles and stuff.
Yeah, shot, how it's shot holistically, yeah.
Well, I don't really care about how it was shot, but it looked good. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't really do anything cool or cutting edge, but it looked good. The whole time I was just like, oh, they had Tyler Perry Studios. I'm here for this. Like, this looks really nice. I don't want to say considering it was shot there, because his studio was like gorgeous, state of the art. Yeah. But it was like, wow, it feels good to know that Tyler Perry Studios produced a movie of this caliber, right? Because it wasn't cut corners. I mean, there was a lot of random product placement in the movie, but you know, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I thought the movie was fine. It's one of them things where it was a lazy Saturday, and it's like, okay, cool. I don't feel like I wasted so much of my time in watching it. I thought the costumes were beautiful as well. I thought it was shot really. You know, it didn't look low budget, you know, considering that it came out on I shouldn't be playing Amazon like that and Netflix like that and stuff like that. Cause I mean, obviously they have big budgets now. Right. So, but I think it's like they're catching up to what the big major movie studios are doing, and it didn't look like they were far behind. So it looked good. I mean, it was fine.
Okay. Come on.
It was a no for me.
We didn't even ask yes or no. Girl came out the gate.
I'm sorry.
Well, we know where Camille stands. I hated it.
It looked all right, and the costumes was cool. But I actually fell asleep and had to, like, it took me a while to watch it. But, I mean, it looked all right.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I agree. I think, well, now I agree with Camille. I think the cinematography was well done. I too was impressed with how it was shot. I forgot it was shot at Tyler Perry Studios. So shout out to, you know, the quality of it. The costumes were absolutely brilliant. You know, shout out to Ruthie Carter, who is known for just cranking out great costuming. She also teamed up with two South African designers, costume designers, to help influence things. The music was, you know, random. It came off, there were moments where I was like, is this a musical? Like, what is with these random concerts, like Gladys Knight and Salt and Pepper and the two twins from the first movie did a rap
thing with the guy.
Yeah, that was his funeral. That was a celebration of life. Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, the scene with Teyana Taylor and dude, the Lavelle guy grabs the mic and starts rapping. What's the purpose of that?
Was he trying to impress on someone?
I was confused. Because it was confusing.
I took that moment to be a play off of when the other girl was presented in the first movie and that whole production of that. Yeah. But they played off the talents of the people that were casted, and so she was doing something and then he did some music. Like, I didn't... I mean,
yeah, that's it.
I didn't feel like there was a... And I feel like I'm super anti-music, and I didn't feel like there was a lot of music inserted in random places, so that's very interesting.
Wow, yeah. Because I think the concert, yeah, his funeral was within like the first 15 minutes of the movie. And I was just like, what is happening right now? Like, what is, I mean, they had hella random feature. Everybody was in the darn movie. Mm-hmm. So that was already like, everybody's in this movie. But it seemed random to me. I don't remember that much. Okay, there was music, but I don't remember it being performative. Maybe that's what it is. It wasn't concert-like. So y'all didn't think it was too many people just too many people that was just thrown in the movie.
Yeah, I actually 100% expected
it. I did
that.
Too.
Like, I would have been surprised if there were less people.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it was a lot of people in the first one too.
Yeah, it
wasn't as much.
But
they didn't.
It's coming to America. Like, and then the first movie, they didn't know that it was gonna blow up as big as it did, and it has been for 30 years. Like,
that's fair.
Yeah.
And then I have a question. So like. But the cameos, I appreciated that they weren't like, you went out of your way to create this stupid scene just to insert this person. Like, Rick Ross could have been anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't bothered that it was Rick Ross because he could have been anyone for the two little lines that he had. Like, it was fine. Like, I get annoyed by cameos when it's like, you went out of your way to shoot this entire scene just to have this man walk by and do this cameo. Mm-hmm. Like, that was dumb.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, what y'all think about the acting?
I mean...
Exactly.
Go ahead, Camille. Go ahead.
It's about Tyler Perry level. I think it was.
Oh, No, listen.
Okay, let me give a Tyler Perry movie. I ain't talking about that last one he did with Sicily. I ain't talking about that one. I'm talking about the decent. Well, y'all are like, no. But the decent Tyler Perry movies. My Family That Prays. Diary of a Mad Black Woman.
Family That Prays, perhaps. Diary of a Mad Black Woman,
I'll give you that. Yeah, I'll give you Family That Prays.
For Color Girls.
No.
Girl, trigger. No. We're not going to talk about For Color Girls. No. You were doing much better before you mentioned that.
It was a good acting.
I wouldn't say the acting was at that level. I wouldn't say that. I think the acting was, first, I was highly impressed that they got pretty much everybody from the original cast minus the Maj Sinclair, who played Queen Aelion, who passed away, and then Eric LaSalle, who was Lisa's original boyfriend, he wasn't in it. But
what would he be doing in it?
Yeah.
They wrote a scene for him to do something. He was going to be the new slow what was it called?
Soul Glow.
He was going to be the new Soul Glow guy. So they were going to have him in the background in a commercial doing it or something. But he's on a show right now that's actually doing really well. And he was just like, I'm not taking time out of shooting this to come be a cameo on a commercial. So he didn't do it. But I was impressed that everybody was still back alive. Look, I mean, this is 33 years later, and these black people still look amazing. Well, they look really, really good, especially...
Like, that's a stretch.
They looked pretty impressive for 30 years of age.
30 years is a long time.
Yes, and mm-hmm. I especially the woman that Prince Akeem was supposed to marry, she literally doesn't look like she's aged. The one that was like, bark like a dog. No, she looked great to me.
Wow, okay, that's not the reaction that I had. When I saw her, I was like, she looks low-key, I'm sorry, she looked kind of bad. And I was like, I felt like I had seen her in normal life, and she was better.
I agree.
Like, they made her look bad in the movie.
Uh-huh.
So, like, no shade to her. Like, other photos of her I've seen, she looks way better.
I think they did that on purpose to kind of hint that she's been barking like a dog for 33 years.
Oh, okay.
I think that was the play on that. Okay. But, yes, I did not think that she looked good either. But I thought it was intentional.
That's fair. Okay. That's fair.
I didn't get the intentionality.
I missed that too, girl. I was like, well, why'd I do her like that?
Because in my head, I was thinking, that's a good point, Cookie. I'm thinking about her as a person. Like, she looks good for her to have played that same role 33 years ago, like in real life. But yeah, in the movie, they definitely made her look a little sloppy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the acting wasn't bad for me. I mean, it was comparable to the first one. The acting in the first one weren't that great, so...
But I mean, it's a comedy. Like, nobody's going to them expecting, like, this Oscar-level performance. Like, I mean...
Yeah. That's true.
I just want to say, shout out to James Earl Jones for rolling out at 90 years old in these COVID streets. Doing that part that he did. Like, for real. Like,
for real.
At 90 years old, like, I would have been on a Zoom call. Ain't no way. But I have another thing on the acting. So I saw online that someone said that they would have liked to have seen, somebody tweeted and added DC Young Fly. They would have liked to have seen him play Eddie Murphy's son. Hmm. And he said that he actually auditioned for that part 3 times and he didn't get it.
Oh, wow.
So, oh, wow.
Think that DC Young Fly would have been a better son?
He would have been more entertaining.
Yeah.
He would have been so much more funny. I actually did not laugh one time the entire time I watched this movie.
Agreed.
I laughed the last 15 minutes. I laughed before that, but it was like, this is ridiculous. But real live laughing, like, this is making me laugh, was like within the last 15 minutes.
I didn't chuckle, not once.
Yeah, me either.
But I think if DC Young Fly had done it, I probably would have laughed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And honestly, like, the son didn't really stand out for real. Like, and as often as he was depicted in the movie, like, he was not that present in my mind at all.
I agree. But shout out to Leslie Jones. This is probably like one of the first roles where she was actually very pleasant and enjoyable. Like,
I don't like her.
She wasn't a lot to be in this movie.
Okay.
I was like, why did they put her in here? I was so bothered by her presence.
There are people that genuinely think she's funny.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They do. Because she's adjusted her persona. Like, she hasn't always been like loud and, because I was watching her, I've seen something she did earlier on in her career, and I'm like, you're very tolerable here. So I think she's playing into that character she's created, and it's, God bless her. But okay, plot. What y'all think about, you know, the storyline for this sequel?
I thought it was very predictable. I thought it was pretty I did think that it was creative enough because I was wondering before, I knew kind of the storyline before I started watching it, but I was like, I wonder how he gonna get back to America. Like, what, Why is he gonna go back to America if he got the love of his life there? And he so I thought that little throw in to figure out, oh, he had all girls and now he has to go find an heir. Like, I thought that was a nugget of creativity, but the rest of it was pretty, I mean, it was pretty predictable and it was fine. It was fine, but yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't here for the plot. I agree that it was predictable, but I'm just like, I mean, it has been done before. And also, I mean, I get that in the end, he threw a girl a bone and was like, yeah, you gonna be queen. But why did we spend an entire movie in 2021 focusing around trying to find a male heir when you have three viable female heirs in your family? Like, I just feel like, no. And for him to have been as radically progressive as he was as a prince, I just felt like it was very unrealistic, the whole storyline. Like, and I just wouldn't
for it. I agree.
Yeah, I didn't like the storyline at all. I feel like we could have done what they did in a shorter amount of time. And I didn't
100%.
That's the summary 100%. Right there. Yep.
But going back to what Drea said real quick, I agree. I think that they should have put the daughter more of a focus. I still think that he should have still gone looking for a male heir because that was something that he was battling with. It's like he's super progressive, but this is one thing that he's holding on to that he can't get past. So that could have been the tension to allowing the story to develop instead of focusing on this boy who ain't never been African and he had to learn how to be a prince. That's, I mean,
yeah. And then, I mean, even just thinking about acting, Kiki Layne is a great actress. Yep. Like, why would you waste her on these two scenes to come bring this boy that nobody even remembers in the movie? Like, you weren't even memorable in this main role. Like, but I agree. I felt like the movie was basically like a, it just seemed like they redid the original, like, movie. Like, they didn't rewrite nothing. They just inserted it into 2020. Like, they re-said many lines. They that was had intentional. Many scenes that were very... That was irritating to me. Like, no. Like, y'all doing scenes over again that was in the first one? If I wouldn't have watched the first one, I would have watched the first one.
Like, it's like an ode to the people who are the fans.
Yeah.
Do you like any remake, or do you tend to just not like remakes in general?
I like remakes that they Creed, like paid homage to Rocky, and there was tagging to that storyline, but it stood alone. It stood on its own, like it continued a story without it literally remaking stuff.
I don't think that's the same. Yeah, I agree.
Okay,
because it would, that would be like Creed is a whole separate, that's like almost like a Marvel situation to where it's like you have characters that stand on their own and this is Creed's story. That's not the same thing as Coming to America. Coming to America is an expansion of this same character's story.
That's fair. I guess using Marvel, like the Ironmans, they like tapped into what, like two taps into what is in one, but we're not really,
but those are
remaking stuff from one.
But that's different as well, because that's like they're progressing a storyline. This is literally, they made one standalone movie and it became iconic, and 30 years later they said let's do another one. Pretty much the whole point is to pay homage to the one that became such an iconic movie.
I missed that.
Like Bad Boys,
yeah. Okay, that's fair.
I mean, you know, same. Yeah,
that's fair. I think in my head, that's a good point. I think in my head, it's a differentiation between two and threes of movies as opposed to like a sequel and like a, you know, you're literally just, we're gonna bring that into modern time. So that's a good framework, because I literally was just like, y'all just gonna take the script from the first one and just re-say it with new people. Okay, cool. With that in mind, I still didn't like it. I agree, it was unrealistic. You find out you have a son, you go get him and bring him back, and he just like, yeah, I'll go with you, and y'all just come back to act like,
I thought that was realistic.
Well, that part
you don't even have a job, and this man telling you come be the heir to an entire kingdom. Baby, sign me up.
And Arsenio had a suitcase in there that fell open with all them bills. That was the most realistic part of that whole movie.
But I mean, he don't know how, you know, that's really his son. They didn't tell us if they took any kind of test or not.
He don't care.
You gonna accept me as your son? I ain't finna ask you.
Talking about on Prince King Hakeem's stance. You just get told you got a son.
It's the same for him too, because I really don't care whether or not he's actually my son or not. This is a continuance of a legacy that if I don't find an heir, these other people gonna come over and they gonna take over. Yeah, he don't care either.
Okay, yeah, I guess it was rushed. It was a little disjointed. I just. There were moments where I was just like, what are we doing here? Like, what is happening? Why are we doing this? Like, she cut, like, Lavelle and what was her name? The girl he ends up falling in love with, the late girl that was, like, taking care of him. She cut your hair once, y'all walked through the garden and kissed, and now you running off to America to go marry her?
That's like The Bachelor.
That's that's like all them little period piece movies. Them people be falling. They be that's like true. You winked at me and my hand grazed yours and I'm in
that's
love
true.
And
we
can marry.
That's true.
Like, I watched that and I was like, this is so like Downton Abbey.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's fair. Wow. Okay. Well, let's jump into some things that were presented in the movie. We'll start by it seemed like, and this is what's interesting about movies that were made in the 90s that you now try and play in a setting now where there's a lot more sensitivity, certain issues, that it wouldn't land. Like watching the first one, I was like, oh man, they would not get away with a lot of this stuff current day. But it seemed like they had the opportunity to address important issues, and it seemed to be trivialized, whether it was the Me Too movement, gentrification, that whole barbershop scene, which I thought they would be dead by now, but that's a whole nother thing. And then specifically date rape. So did you guys, when y'all watched the scene of Prince Hakeem when they were when Sebi was retelling how he impregnated the woman, when y'all watched that, did y'all realize that scene was basically date rape, or did y'all just watch it and was like, oh, okay, that's how he got a son?
When I watched it, I thought, oh, that's problematic, but in my mind the term date rape did not come to mind.
Yeah,
and I think that is a testament to how we are trained to see those things, because that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And if he had done that to a woman, then I would have thought that. Yeah. But that term didn't come to mind when seeing it be done to him. I did have the thought of, that's not okay, but it didn't go as far as date rape in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. Because date rape, I think of a man slipping something into a woman's drink and raping her. The thought of date rape, I was just like, okay, that's not okay. But
yeah,
date rape, no.
Yeah, I agree. When I saw it, I was just kind of like, that's I felt like you guys could have made this story a different way. But I too didn't jump to date rape until I started kind of reading reviews about it, and I was like, oh no, it was problematic. But yeah, one could argue that it was darn near close to date rape, if not, if nothing else, him being taken advantage of because he was just put in a situation where he obviously didn't want what she was offering him. But
that's date rape.
So, and I think that goes to, you know, they had opportunities like in that to address issues of like men being raped and that being a real thing. But it when
Ooh,
we
heavy.
Yeah,
and
like
it's Eddie
when
Murphy.
We hear about it. It is, but if you're going to go there, don't, something like that, like, okay, gentrification, and y'all make it a little joke, like, yeah, my brownstone is not worth $10 million. Okay, date rape? If you're going to write the storyline that you impregnating this woman because she took advantage of you after she gave you a drug, then you can't play light with that. Like, you either address it, or you leave that alone and you find some other way to bring about this air.
Oh, what I was going to say is I thought about that. Like, how could they have brought about an heir for him if his wife only had, if him and his wife only had girls, and they want to say that he don't have an heir and he has to go find an heir, which is the tension of the story. How else could he have had an heir?
He could have just slept with a woman.
But his character.
But the whole thing was that, like, he was, like, saving himself for the woman that he was finding. Because in the original movie, the whole thing was, like, him wanting to find.
And him being in love and him being pressured to have sex and do all this other stuff with all these women. But he's like, no, I'm going to find my one true love. Like, how else could he have had an heir?
But honestly, when they started to tell the story, what I thought they were going to say was that Simi had given him something and that there was a night that happened that he did not remember. Mm-hmm. I did not think they was going to say that she drugged him and then all of that happened. So I think that even if they had done it like that, like his friend gave him something as kind of like a, hey man, loosen up, and I never told you that this is what actually happened the rest of that night. I think that would have gone over much better the way it was actually
That's written. True.
And it would have been in line because Simi was the one that was bad and mischievous and constantly getting into something. I don't understand why they chose that route. That just seems so, it's just problematic. And just speaks to a bigger issue of when men vocalize the being taken advantage of. It's like dismissed or seems so far-fetched because we are conditioned to be like, no, there's no way. That's impossible. You know, or just kind of be like, oh yeah, that's problematic, but keep it moving. As opposed to if it was flipped and he was the one who had done that, we all would have been like, whoa, this is trash. Were there any other things that you felt like they glossed over? Even like, I think the barbershop scene was probably the biggest concentration of them talking about what's current right now and making jokes about it. Did y'all feel any kind of way about the Me Too statements they had and all that stuff?
That's what I had. What they said?
Yeah,
about
I don't
Me
know
too?
What they said.
So, the guy was basically like, "Yeah, now you can't grope women without getting in trouble," and then, Prince Hakeem was just like, oh, I'm sorry, you can't touch women inappropriately anymore, or something along that lines. A line before, because it was the white guy character that said that, and there was a line before he said that was just kind of like, oh, you guys are segueing into talking about women's rights and, you know, you not being able to touch them appropriately. Because after that one, the guy was just like, oh yeah, no, it's no problem, don't apologize, I did all that when I was younger, I had my fun, kind of a thing.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I don't remember that at all, but I actually don't really feel that any type of way about it because it's a barbershop, and that is 100% the reality of the conversations that happen in barbershops. Like, the biggest controversies, the biggest, like, that is what they're talking about in barbershops every day. Like, even the movie Barbershop, like, that's some stuff that Cedric the Entertainer's character would have said, because that's the reality of barbershop conversations. And I mean, from what I recall hearing, because I don't remember that part, I don't remember hearing anything that had me like, oh my, how dare you say that? But I'm not saying it from a stance of outlandish things are being said and condoned in barbershops. I'm saying there are topics are usually, like, there are lots of controversial topics that come up in barbershops, and they are debated in barbershops. It's not like... Yeah. Someone's like, oh yeah, I just raped this girl last night, and people are like, oh yeah, good for you, man. Like, that, no, those aren't the types of conversations I think are being happening in barbershops. Yeah. So what I'm speaking to is, I don't think it's crazy that these types of topics were being talked about and going back and forth about in the environment of a barbershop. Not that everything that was said was okay.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I get you. Well, next, let's talk about the stereotypes that were in the movie, specifically to Prince Hakeem's heir, Lavelle Johnson, and just his whole narrative as a black man, no father, raised by a single mother, 30, can't keep a job, trying to, you know, get a job, can't keep it. And that whole narrative of them choosing for him to be an unsuccessful Black man being raised by a single mother in, you know, Queens. What were y'all thoughts, if y'all had any, concerning like that stereotype about him as a Black man?
I actually wasn't mad at it, because in the first movie there were so many Black people of prominence, like restaurant owner of multiple franchises. His daughter is dating a Black guy who is the heir to this hair company empire, Black royalty. Like, so then coming into the net, I wasn't mad that, for me, it was like, okay, we are actually showing a full spectrum of the Black experience. And I think it also made it much more believable that he was so willing to leave America and come to Zamunda because, you know, he didn't have a lot of things going well for him the way they portrayed it in America.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't bothered by that at all because there is truth to his story, but the whole Coming to America franchise usually depicts Black excellence, and we still saw Black excellence. Her daddy was still in there opening McDougal's all across the world.
McDowell's.
McDowell's. Oh, not McDougal's.
McDougal's. It's a real place.
That's a real place. McDowell's all across, like, you know, they had the grand opening. So I like the variations of Black instead of it just being all we down and out. We can also be entrepreneurs. We also royalty. So it didn't bother
me. There are a significant number of Black men who that is their story.
Yeah.
Slavery. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There we go. I have one reference at least each episode. But yeah. Well, I'll say I appreciated the fact that in this movie, the same stereotypes that were in the first one concerning Africans weren't the same in this movie. In that it was the same cast, so you still have Black Americans that are playing, you know, Africans with the accents and stuff. And I think the only person that I was like, oh, that accent is absolutely terrible, was Rick Ross. Like, that just, I don't even understand what that, you don't remember Rick Ross being in there?
No, I thought Rick Ross's accent was better than Teyana Taylor's.
Oh, yeah, I forgot she talked. Her accent was bad as well.
And I was surprised, because I feel like she's a beast at everything. I was shocked that her accent was so bad.
You know, accents will get you. Like,
She's a beast at, like, absolutely everything.
But have you seen her acting? She was in Honey 3 or something like that.
Who in the world has seen that?
I ain't seen Honey 3. She was in a Tyler Perry movie, but she was annoying.
Oh, she yelled Byron the whole time? Yeah. She's not a good actress.
I mean, I wouldn't say in this movie, I don't think her acting was bad. Like, I think her accent was bad.
I put that all together as one experience. And yeah, like, yeah, I wasn't expecting the accents to be that great. I was actually a bit impressed by Wesley's accent. But, like, yeah, Tiana's wasn't good. Rick Ross's, it was like, why? Like, what are we doing here? Like, why did you do that? But I appreciated that there were more African people in the movie, even if they were just making cameos like Davido did, that set where he was singing his song, and you had the Kimbe Mutombo, and they placed people throughout it that was just like, oh, okay, as opposed to the first one where it's just like, there's a lot of stereotypes about Africa that's happening right now that's just kind of like, what is going on? I felt like there seemed to be less stereotypes with this movie. I don't remember being like, I know, as much as in the first one.
I will say, I think Eddie Murphy's accent was better in the first one than it was in the second one.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. It was almost like he was trying a lot hard. Like, I don't know. It was weird. It was weird, but I agree with you. Okay, so last thing. There's been, you know, I like that, in, you know, with the first one, it was Prince Akeem coming to America. With this one, it was Lavelle going to Africa. And there's a lot of talk about Black Americans migrating back to Africa and going back home. Ghana starting this initiative of giving citizenship to Black Americans, welcoming them back home. You guys kind of alluded earlier to, if you are in that situation, you will be like, hey, Zamunda, here I come. What are your thoughts concerning just, not just specific to the movie, in general, the idea and the notion of Black people migrating back to Africa, specifically, well, not specifically, just Africa in general. You don't have to land in West Africa, but just Africa in general.
Well, you know, I said if I was in that specific situation,
clarify for us.
Sign me up, right? Like, I'm signing up to be in the top tier of royalty of a kingdom that's got some stuff, you know?
Okay.
As far as the whole Back to Africa movement, you know, my opinion may be unpopular. I don't know.
Gonna say
but
it.
I think I'm with you, based on my firsthand experience in the parts of Africa that I have been to, saying let's go back to Africa would be like asking me to move to like the pre-gentrified hood. I get I needed to come up some more before I'm finna say, yeah, let me go relocate. Like,
okay.
Like, I mean, and not that everything is a village and, because it's not like that. Yep. It is not. There are some very highly developed areas. But even with the highly developed areas, you hit about two blocks and you can be at a village. I just don't think that's for me. But in where I'm at in life right now.
Okay. Camille?
I, too, don't desire to go back to Africa. I do encourage people to travel to Africa, to experience Africa, to see that it is more than what is displayed on television, see the development that's happening there. But to go there to live, that's not something I desire to do. And the corruptness and the extreme difference between wealth and poverty. Because, like, we have our differences here in America, but the level that I saw in Africa was astounding to me. I'm gonna stay and deal with the problems of America.
Yeah.
What'd you say,
Tara? I think I could do a little dual setup.
I could do that little jump back and forth.
Yeah.
I think I could do have a house, you know, and do some seasons. I absolutely think I could do that, and I think that would be great. And I think that would be awesome, but I don't think that I would be willing to relinquish all of the privilege that comes from being in America for the sake of going to live in the parts of Africa I've been to. I can't speak to no place I ain't never been before.
Yeah. And I agree. I mean, as the fellow African, Resident. That's it. Yeah, I'm the resident. I have thought about this quite a bit, and I do plan on going back, and I don't believe I'll do a permanent thing. I think it'll progressively start with travel and then periods of time of going back to Nigeria, having a home back there. I mean, 98% of my family's back there, so I don't even necessarily need to have my own place, but definitely want to have a home there to be able to, you know, when I go to reside there for periods of time. Definitely do the, when I get my, you know, American citizenship, do the dual thing, because there are, the American passport is powerful, period, and you'll be dumb to just throw it away. So, but yeah, I'm I unfortunately agree that parts of Africa, and specifically the parts that I would want to go and reside, are not as developed. Even in the highly developed parts, they're not as developed as it should be. And then I talk to family back home who are like, they want to leave, and how corrupt things are and how bad things are. It's not very enticing, but I definitely think that, like, to Camille's point, it is very, I think it's beneficial for people of color to go to Africa and to experience it. To, like, Drea, when you said you went during the world race, how you were, it was just black. Like, everyone's black. That's an experience that as black people in America, you don't get to experience in totality unless it's like very specific curated moments, you know, like a,
unless it's homecoming.
Yeah, homecoming, HBCU experience. Your family picnics, or, you know, like, all of my friends, I've curated you to come to this moment, not just I walk out on the street. Like, it's like when we're in Atlanta walking through Kroger and it's like, whoa, everybody here black? What? Like, that was a mind-blowing experience. And to live that, it has its own issues, but to live that where everybody looks the same and all that stuff, I think is an experience that as a black person, that every black person should have, even if it's just saying you're visiting in a period. But yeah, I overall, well, before I do overall, so apparently, I didn't research this a lot, but apparently Eddie Murphy is saying there could be a Coming to America 3.
No.
That would be recorded 16 years from now when he turns 75.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No.
So y'all ain't here for that? No?
No.
But, well, for multiple reasons. One, the second one wasn't that good. Definitely not looking forward to a third. Also, they did not develop the under generation of characters well enough for you to be able to, what, pick up their storylines? We don't even know. We can't even remember these people's names.
No. Yep. That's agreed. Funny. Yeah, that's a good point. So for those that haven't watched Coming to America, do you think it's worth watching or no? They could just pass and live their lives only seeing the first one.
I think they should watch it, yes. I think especially if you've seen the first one, you enjoyed the first one for nostalgia, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would say watch the second one. Do I plan on ever watching it again? Probably not. So, I mean, that just is what it is.
Okay, Camille?
Yeah, I always say watch it for yourself. Form your own opinions, have your own experience. So, yeah, give it a watch. There are not any funny moments, but there are some nostalgic moments there for the people who watch the first one.
I'm going to be contrarian. Don't watch it. It ain't worth it. Just watch the first one. You'll be good. You literally would not miss out on anything, except for the costumage, which you could just look at pictures online. But yeah, don't worry about it. Just watch the first one and play some Afrobeats music in the background. You'll be good.
Wow.
But
I agree. If you've never seen the first one, it's not worth embarking on that journey. But if you have seen the first one and you enjoyed it, then I think it's worth watching the second one.
No, just watch it again and play some Afrobeats in the music. Like, I just... But hey, do your thing. Whatever you choose. This was a great conversation. And we will see you all next time. Bye.
Bye.